Well, joining me now in the studio to talk a little bit more about Carolina men's basketball falling short in the Sweet 16 last night is 97.9 The Hill's own sports reporter, Michael Coe, who stayed up to watch every minute of that game and to cover it. Michael, thank you for still being here at the station despite your late night last night.
Yeah, Brighton, late night, early morning, and really tough loss for the Tar Heels. There were several times in the game where I thought, okay, here's where they're going to pull away, and it just never happened.
It didn't. It was, I imagine, pretty exciting for everybody watching, especially in that first half where there was just so much offense. Carolina halfway to 100 at the halfway
point. More than
point.
Halfway.
Yeah, and then everything just kind of ground to a halt for them in the second half. Their shooting just went cold. And I'm curious. I think a lot of fans are pointing to different things in maybe the closing minutes, but I just want to talk about the second half writ large. When you were watching back and going through your coverage last night, what do you think kind of went wrong in that second half?
Well, they just had no answer for Grant Nelson, Carolina. And it's something that we talked about on Countdown to Tip-Off yesterday. Grant Nelson, he's a matchup problem because he has the height at 6'10 to challenge someone like Bacot inside. But he can also shoot the three, so that extends Carolina's defense out where it is less comfortable. That is with Bacot defending out on the perimeter. And out on the perimeter, he proved too quick for guys like Harrison Ingram, who really couldn't stop him off the dribble. And he's just someone that Carolina doesn't have a copy of on their roster. They tried several different defenders on him. Bacot, Ingram, obviously Jalen Withers played defense on him in the final few minutes and did pretty well. But then he turned into bad Jalen Withers for a hot minute, and that's really what did Carolina in those final minutes.
Yeah, you'd pointed out Grant Nelson and that athleticism, too. You know, everybody on the broadcast and coming into the game, it's all Alabama three-pointers, mm-hmm. but I thought it was interesting that Nelson was able to pick his spots and really get to the bucket, which just didn't seem to necessarily fit the rest of Alabama's archetype. And same with some of their guards in the first half, too. Obviously, they go for layups, but there were some, they were hitting some mid-range shots and, of course, tough threes. To your point of not being able to stop Nelson, mm-hmm. it did feel like, in general, that Carolina's defense, which had largely been kind of this defining force and factor for them, just had one of those nights where they weren't quite on.
Yeah, I think they were so keyed in on Sears, and he had a decent game, but certainly not a Mark Sears level game, that you forget that guys like Rylan Griffin, Aaron Estrada, and Grant Nelson are all Power 5 basketball players too. So I think it may have been one of those cases where they were so focused on one guy that they let the supporting cast beat them, which Carolina had done to so many teams this year when RJ Davis had been maybe a little quieter. The supporting cast stepped up. That looked like it was going to happen against Alabama because Cormac Ryan, Ingram, they both had really excellent first halves, but it just didn't carry over.
Well, to your point, too, it had felt like this whole season and in games where Carolina had lost this year, it's like, okay, you need a third scorer to step up. And I think it doesn't surprise anybody that it's a night where you had a couple of players who had really good offensive nights and then just everybody else kind of struggled a little bit or, in the Elliot Cadeau, Seth Trimble range, they just didn't see playing time in the second half because of their defense and how Alabama was playing them on offense. But I don't think anybody would have expected that it was the ACC player of the year mm-hmm. who was having the really tough shooting night and who was going to be the one who just, didn't really have it.
Yeah, it was his first time not making a three-pointer in a game since February of 2023. That tells you how good RJ Davis had been for Carolina in the interim. And yeah, he still ended up with 16 points, which is the funny thing. That's a decent scoring output, but still below average for RJ this season and certainly not the type of performance that he would have liked to have and not the type of performance that Carolina was able to handle. You can't handle your best outside shooter going 0-for from outside, especially against a team that shoots it as much as Alabama does.
Yeah, we're speaking with 97.9 The Hill's own Michael Coe, and you had mentioned in Countdown to Tip-Off as well that you didn't like Carolina's chances if they got into a three-point shooting contest with Alabama. They did in the first half, and it was working. A part of that was by Cadeau and Trimble each hitting 2 3-pointers,
yes.
which was against the scouting report, as Nate Oates said on the television broadcast. And in the second half, a part of it was it just felt like they just weren't falling. But I'm curious to your thoughts on that, too. I thought Carolina fell a little too in love with the three-pointer after it worked in the first half.
Yeah, particularly RJ. I think if there's one criticism that you can have of him, it's that he started forcing some of those outside shots later in the second half, he started maybe tightening up a little bit, sort of what happened against NC State in the ACC championship, where, yes, RJ did score 30, but he took a ton of shots to get those 30 points. And yeah, those misses, they hurt Carolina in the long term because those lead to long rebounds. That gives Alabama fast break points where Alabama loves to play. Yeah, overall in the second half, they shot 10 of 40, 25%, which has to be, if not the worst half of shooting Carolina has had this season. Very reminiscent of that ACC championship against NC State where Carolina played some good offense in the first half, led at halftime, and then they just trailed off because the defense changed their looks a little bit. RJ Davis started forcing it. Yeah, very similar when you think back to it. Carolina was more competitive in this one, obviously, but still just not able to get it done.
Yeah, the reality is that there is only one team that gets into the NCAA tournament that gets to end their season on a win. Carolina, obviously, has very high expectations for themselves as a program. Fans do as well. So falling short is certainly disappointing in a game, too, where it just seemed like, you know, they had a lead in the last minute and then it slipped away. But I'm curious, you know, we'll have time to speculate about what comes next for the program and who will be back next year and all of that stuff. But what do you think after having covered, you know, all of the games this year and been to so many games, Michael, how do you think this 2024 Carolina men's basketball team is going to be remembered?
I think they'll be remembered as just a fun group to be around. That's something that Hubert Davis conveyed multiple times this year and after the Alabama game, too, is that this was a team that wanted to be together, wanted to be a team, is what he said. And I kind of looked at it and I sort of use this characterization when I saw the guys they were getting in the portal. It was kind of an island of misfit toys. You had a lot of players from programs that had had substandard 2023 seasons, Ingram coming from Stanford, Wojcik from Brown, Ryan from Notre Dame, Withers from Louisville. And they came here and they were greater than the sum of their parts. They joined in with two program stalwarts in Davis and Baycott, some holdovers from last year's Carolina team in Trimble and Washington, who, again, didn't have the type of season that they would have wanted in Chapel Hill as freshmen. And they came together and they had a tremendous season. They won 29 games, won the ACC regular season title, obviously got to the ACC title game, reached a Sweet 16, which is pretty darn good in the grand scheme of things. I think obviously there's a lot of disappointment now. That's a game Carolina probably should have won, and you would feel good about their chances against Clemson in the Elite Eight. But once the dust settles and when you can – it's sort of like the 2019 team with Coby White and Cam Johnson. When you – after the disappointment, you can look back on that team and say, man, they were really good and they were really fun to be around. Obviously, that doesn't really help with dealing with the loss, but it's just something to think about.
It definitely is. I want to get to your Clemson point in a second, but I also want to ask this too, because I think a lot of people come out of the woodworks last night questioning the coaching decisions and all of that stuff, but especially considering the lows of the 22-23 season, being able to consistently be good this year certainly turns things around for the Carolina program and head coach Hubert Davis. So do you feel like you learned anything about Davis in his third season at the helm for the Tar Heels?
Yeah, I think certainly about his maybe mantra in the transfer portal is he may not go after the number one guy from each team coming into the transfer portal, but he's looking for guys who fit his philosophy. And I think when you look at the players that he brought in, Ryan, Withers, players like that, he looks for players who can stretch the floor offensively, shoot the three, but can also provide plus defense, as Ryan and Withers had at times this season. I think he really values the quote-unquote glue guys, the Theo Pinsons, the Isaiah Hickses, players who just are very fun to be around, who sort of gather the team in, have those players-only meetings. And that's something that you could argue that Hubert Davis was in his playing days under Coach Smith, and that's something that I think that he's going to look for in the transfer portal and recruiting in high school.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what off-season moves happen for the Tar Heels. Of course, we will have plenty of time to talk about that, so I do want to talk briefly about Clemson and Alabama in the Elite Eight. I'm sure plenty of fans...
Sorry, is this the college football playoff or is this the NCAA tournament?
It doesn't quite feel right, and both these teams, you know, looking to get into their first Final Four. I'm sure a lot of Carolina fans out there won't really care, but listen, it's an ACC opponent that Carolina, I'm sure, would have liked to have faced, but is also playing playing well right now versus the team that just beat them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think? What do you think might happen in that game Saturday night? And which team do you think has a more interesting story when it comes to reaching the Final Four?
Well, I have to tell you, Clemson, this is their first Elite Eight since 1980. I don't believe they've ever been to a Final Four. And yeah. The Tigers, outside of UConn, they may have been the most impressive team in this tournament. They've played some really good teams. New Mexico won the Mountain West. They played Baylor from the Big 12. Obviously, just beat Arizona. And they've only trailed in those three games for less than a minute. This is a team that has controlled most of the games they played. You look at that game against Arizona, I think a lot of people, myself included, were thinking Arizona was just going to race out to a lead immediately. No, that wasn't the case. Clemson led by double digits for a lot of that first half. And yeah, they're playing really well, and I think the scary thing is PJ Hall hasn't really had a great tournament so far. It's been other players like Ian Shefflin and Chase Hunter. So I would not be surprised at all if Clemson made it to the Final Four, which imagine saying that in January when the Tigers were on a losing streak. Yeah.
Well, I mean, to that point as well, I think it feels weird for a lot of folks that we don't have that blockbuster UNC-Arizona matchup that everybody kind of had circled from the beginning of the season and certainly from the beginning of the NCAA tournament when they were put into the same regional. And, you know, to close things out, we were joking here at the station. I think a lot of people are probably saying the same thing. Funny in some ways that both Caleb Love and RJ Davis end their senior seasons, you know, on different teams, but both going 0-for-9 from 3-point land, each having kind of a rough shooting night, and unfortunately their teams crash out. I feel like that's just kind of indicative of the last four seasons that they've been in college basketball.
Yeah, you got to live with the bounce. Obviously, RJ, I think, was maybe a little more consistent than Caleb was this season, and I think Carolina as a whole was more consistent than Arizona was this season, but yeah, it is a very darkly comic way for both of their seasons to end. And both of those guys have an additional year of eligibility. So if they really don't want to go out like that, which I could understand why, they're both very good basketball players and are better than what they showed, they could both be back at UNC in Arizona next season. You never know.
It will be interesting to find out. In the meantime, you can head to chapelboro.com, read Michael's coverage from last night and all of his great coverage for this season. Thank you so much, Michael. And a quick plug, too, that he'll have a more season retrospective coming out on Monday that we're looking forward to as well. So, Michael Coe, as always, thanks for joining us.
Yep, thank you, Brighton.
We're going to take a quick break on News on the Hill. When we come back, another look at traffic and weather together.